Blog Talk Radio.
Context of white supremacy, Gusty Renegade, justice, in for another program to share constructive information on racism, white supremacy, what it is, and how it works. Just because I suspect we might be pulling in more traffic, having guests that people think highly of. I know yesterday with Dr. Baruti on his fourth trip, we set new records for page hits, and just had a lot of folks in, so I suspect that might be the case again today. Just in case we have first-time listeners, so you know where you are, context of white supremacy, this is the middle of our end of summer blackout, bringing in some of the best scholars and folks who are black, who are working to replace white supremacy with justice immediately. This segment began yesterday with Dr. Mwalimu K. Baruti, his fourth visit to the cows. On Sunday, we'll be back. Ashra Kwesi, Marira Kwesi of Kemet Nu, they will be here Sunday afternoon, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. Umar Abdullah Johnson will be here on Monday, August 30th at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. Mbewe Aja Ashange of Ghetto Times. He'll be here on Wednesday, September 1st, live from the United Kingdom. Paul Ifeomi Grant. He is a black male in the UK. He's written several books, one of them, Why Willie Lynch Must Die. He will be here live from the United Kingdom on Friday, September 3rd. Dr. Frances Kress-Welsing will make her sixth visit to the context of white supremacy on Sunday, September 5th. That's a week from this Sunday. And Kush, the Black Unifier, will make his return visit on Tuesday, September 7th. So for about the next 2 weeks, that's the lineup. We should be very active. Might even be some additional programs in the meantime. But that is the context of white supremacy, working hard against racism, white supremacy. In this segment, couldn't have had it without our guest today. He is easily one of my favorite guests to have on the program. I think people who listen to this broadcast, they have concurred easily. One of the top guests, just have a great deal of respect for his work. And especially our guest today is one of the few folks that actually put some pressure on Gus T. Renegade to do quality work, getting an endorsement from our guest today and the entire staff on War on the Horizon. Just meant a lot to me and definitely makes me focus every time out to make sure that I'm doing quality work. Pleasure to have him back for the fourth time. Author of War on the Horizon, Black Resistance to the White Sex Assault. The website, waronthehorizon.com. Again, waronthehorizon.com. Our guest today on the context of white supremacy the Irritated Genie of Southeast. Irritated Genie, are you with us?
Yes, sir. Welcome to the Warfront. How you doing, brother?
I am still working hard against the system of white supremacy. How are you doing, sir?
We're doing fantastic, brother. We're very, very happy to find out, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that you received enough of the currency to get that MacBook Pro?
I did, and an order was placed yesterday, so I should have the machine within a week's time, but that is correct.
Well, I just want to say to the black family out there, I really appreciate every brother and sister that reached in your pocket. I don't care if you gave 50 cents, because we truly, as a race of people, we need desperately as many Gus T. Renegades out there that can have sincere, committed, mature dialogue, unafraid of considering what the solutions are to the problems faced by black people. We need our people 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to have more brothers and sisters out there like yourself engaging our people in thinking constructively so that then we can act constructively. And I really want to say to the people out there that contributed, and our organization contributed as well, if we do not put our money behind the people who will spend their lives dedicated to finding resolution for black people as it relates to the system of racism, white supremacy, and white aggression, then we will die. We will not get any progress. We have to understand that revolution and change has to be financed, and it's not coming from no Paramount Studio. It's not coming from no Henry Kissinger Foundation or Ford Foundation. It's got to come from the pockets of black people who work hard every day and decide that it is better to spend our money and economic resource with brothers and sisters who dedicate themselves to us than to throw it away and continue to be slaughtered and destroyed. And so I want to thank you, because this brother needs whatever he needs to continue doing what he's doing.
Thank you.
I had to get that in before we started, because once we start, we can't slow down to say that. So we had to start at the top of the hour.
Sincerely, thank you. And thank you to everybody at the War on the Horizon staff. I sincerely appreciate the investment and the support. I see them posting links to the program on Facebook. I hope it is worthy of your time and energy. And like I said, you all are the few group of folks that can actually put some pressure on Gus to make sure we are doing the correct thing. Cannot be embarrassing Irritated Genie and the folks at War on the Horizon. I got to switch gears to begin the program, because I am under orders today to begin the program. So I will play a sound clip to begin, but I am under orders, so I want to get started correctly. Here we go.
Our people are very serious about not being very serious. Meanwhile, white people are very serious about playing hardball against us. And this hardball is called genocide.
The words of Dr. Kamau Cambone. I spoke with him earlier today, and he said, number one, he said, Irritated Genie of Southeast, in his opinion, is one of the most brilliant scholars working to solve the problem of white domination. That was one of the first things he said. Second thing he said was that he had a discussion with Irritated Genie after one of his visits to the cows, and that he had rave reviews about the program. He thought it went very well, and I was very stunned that he had heard the program via Irritated Genie. Third thing he said was he asked me, when I told him that you were going to be visiting with us again today, he asked me if I would ask you, Irritated Genie, what your view was of the presentation that Dr. Cambone did just a few weeks back at a Bibi Tumikasa. He said he thought that you were able to listen to that broadcast, and if you did, if you could share any thoughts about what you heard.
Okay, I'm honored to be able to answer that question, and I'm gonna answer that question like this. It goes without saying it was outstanding, but I'm gonna answer it a little differently. You know, in my life there have been milestones. There have been a number of different milestones. One of the milestones, just to give people an idea, because everybody's life is different. When I read The Destruction of Black Civilization and I read the first page of Africans at the Crossroads, and when he says that in order for us to begin as African people the necessary re-education of our people for survival on this planet, that we must understand the central fact in our lives, and that is that the white race is our bitter enemy. That was a linchpin moment in my life, because as much as our scholars give us information, most of them want to be what they call neutral. Here's the information, you judge for yourself. I don't believe in that because this is racial warfare. I'm not saying that I'm criticizing them. I'm just saying I don't believe in that. In case a person didn't get it, give them the correct answer, because they may have to lean on you for that. Dr. Chancellor Williams was the first of the griots that I saw who went out on a limb and made the necessary declaration such that I could say, okay, that's what I thought. I'm glad somebody said it. I'm okay. I'm using that as an example to say that there was a last piece that I needed in my life. I knew from the time I was very young that whites needed to be removed from this planet. I knew it. But I have never definitively had someone say it when it wasn't in anger and then take it back. I've never had anyone say in a clear, concise, mature manner that the only proper resolution to avoiding black genocide and the only resolution to the problem of white racial aggression against African people was the extermination of the white race. It is not that I didn't know it, but I had no confirmation. And it takes a very special person to do something without confirmation. And the first person who I've ever heard say it, and when I heard him say it and I told people, they were not moved the way that I was. But at some point I realized it's because it's not their calling, it's mine. This is what I was born to do. But I wasn't man enough to make that decision and statement by myself because no one else had done it. So in the back of my mind, I was curious as to whether or not I was correct or not. When he said it, it removed all doubt, and it let me know this is the reason that we have not been successful in resolving this issue, is because as far as I have seen, I'm sure someone has said it at some point, but in all of my vast research, in all of the history and reading I've done, I have never heard an African in history or current times state it in as definitive, as honest, as truthful, and as a well-researched and definitive manner as our brother Kamau Cambone. And so I can honestly tell you, any time that I can sit down and listen to that brother, including a few weeks ago he had a session online, if he charged $1,000, if I had it, I'd pay it to listen, because he doesn't waste words, and unlike many of our people, he operates without fear. So the things that he says are the things that we need to hear, without regard to how we're going to feel about what he says, how he's going to make our feelings hurt, how our enemies are going to feel about what he says. And it is honesty that I believe that our people need more than anything, such that we can make the correct decisions so that we don't continue dealing with the same problems we've been dealing with for thousands of years, or worse, end up not being able to deal with those problems because we've been systematically eradicated. So to that I would say, I would suggest to everyone, and I'm not saying this about everybody. I want to hear people. I don't big up people just because they say something positive about me. I don't work that way. I don't like everybody. I don't want to like everybody. When I say things about Brother Gus, it's not because he had me on the show. Many people have had me on their show. I say it because I'm listening to the consistency, the commitment, and the sincerity with which you do the work you do, and the professionalism. We need people that are examples of what we're supposed to be. Brother Kamau Cambone is my best example of what an elder is supposed to be. He's not an older person. He's not an older scholar. He's not a griot. He is truly, in the most profound sense, an elder. Because, you know, when people get older, they get less afraid of circumstances because they've lived their lives. and then they can be more honest, and they can give you the benefit of their wisdom of all of the years of learning in their life without the necessity to feel that they have to worry about what you're going to think because they're an elder now. As an elder, when he speaks to us, he gives us many of the answers that we already know but we need reinforced and some answers and resolutions that we have not considered that can help us make the right decisions in this war. So to that I would say, out of everyone that I know in this world, I would say he is the best, in my opinion and in my life history, example of what a black African elder is supposed to be. He is truly a man, and I thank him for giving me the last piece that I needed intellectually to say I know exactly what I'm supposed to do at this point. Whether I'll be successful or not will depend a lot on the mistakes, errors, or correct decisions I make and the decisions our people make. But at any rate, at least I know that I'll go out, not have to go out without making a try. We're going to do our best to resolve this situation.
Wow. Dr. Cambone, I think we said today he should be coming to the cows soon. We're just trying to get a date and time worked out, but that should be happening very soon. I believe Justice is with us. This might be your first time visiting us and actually hearing Justice as well. Justice, if you have some questions for the Irritated Genie, your line should be open. Go right ahead.
Hello. I have some questions for you. How did you get your name?
All right. Well, it sounds like we have a young lady with us, and I thank you. I think that all of us should be raising our children like that, and I thank you for your wonderful question, Justice. The Irritated Genie is a book written by Jacob Carruthers, and it was written about the Haitian Revolution. And the Haitian people, when they were fighting European tyranny and fighting slavery, they had what they called the spirit of the Irritated Genie, and that was the spirit of African people in Haiti to fight back and resist slavery and oppression, rape, brutality, murder, and European aggression. And it was that spirit that they said that roused the oceans and destroyed the ships of the French. It was that spirit that led them into battle and accounted for them defeating the French in battle and the other Europeans, even though they were outgunned. And so that spirit of fight and racial warfare and the willingness to take warfare to whatever level is necessary in order to defeat the white serpent or enemy is the Irritated Genie. So it was that book that has been the greatest inspiration for me in terms of the fight against European, the way war should be waged against European, the mentality that an African can have and still be an African, still consider yourself 100% of an African, even though you take a violent, brutal, and even murderous mentality towards white life and white aggression against black people, and still know that you are a decent person and that God loves you. And so it was with that understanding that I took my personality and tried to adopt myself after the spirit of the Haitian people.
What's warfare?
I'm sorry?
What's warfare?
What's warfare? Okay, that's a very good question. Warfare is when two or more parties enter into a conflict with the intent of one conquering or destroying or doing harm to the other. And it is an ongoing conflict where one group or one individual intends to completely harm or take advantage and get into a power position over the other. So warfare is basically an extended, committed fight against another person or group of people.
What is the best way to counter war?
What is the best way to counter war? Well, that's a very good question, and I'm going to answer that question. It's going to be a long answer. But if we're talking about warfare and countering warfare, one of the first things you have to do is understand the logistics of the warfare, meaning Are you talking about an individual who's trying to come break into your home and take everything you own? Or are you talking about a person that's trying to go into the courthouse and steal your land from you and steal your land and home? You have to know the context of the war that you're in. Today, as African people, I'm going to describe the context of the war that we are facing against the white race so that I can properly answer the sister's question, which is, what is the best way to counter war? The context of the war that we're in is that whites, the white race, has created a system of exterminating black people throughout the world. And they began starting the system by conquering African people all throughout the planet and other groups of non-whites on this planet. Then they began to exploit black people, meaning they stole our resources, they began to rape us, they began to use us to do work for them without paying us. They enslaved us. They stole our musical talent. They stole our intelligence, our math and our science, our knowledge of our culture, and used it for their own benefit. So they were in a heavy period of exploitation. At this point in history, they are now in the process, after having conquered us physically and exploited us to pretty much to the nth degree where there's not much more to pull out of us because they've taken almost everything that is us. They are no longer interested in that part of the warfare or fight. Now whites are interested in literally physically killing all black people on this planet. And in order to do that, what they have done is that they have removed our consciousness, which means our mind from us. Bobby Wright calls it menticide. And basically what that means is the mind of a black man and a black woman that we would have if we were in our right minds in a free society where we were not facing white aggression, that mind that would tell us what to do that would be in our own best interest to protect and preserve our peoplehood and our well-being, they have completely destroyed that. They have made us hate our own women, the men, and made our women hate our men. They have turned us into abusers of our children instead of protectors of our children. Everything that would normally account for black behavior has been destroyed, such that we no longer recognize ourselves as a functional group of people. If a black person in America sees a black person from Africa, instead of saying that's our brother from the continent, he's not looked at as a brother, he's one of them Africans, as if we're not Africans. We have been completely mentally desecrated and destroyed. And so in order to exterminate us now, because they have us unconscious, the objective is to keep us unconscious, unknowing, unable to recognize that we are being warred against, so that they don't encounter any losses in this warfare. Usually in a warfare, you tell someone you're going to hurt them, then they say, well, you're going to hurt me, I'm going to hurt you. Y'all go out there and fight, and you're going to get hit, they're going to get hit. One's going to win, one's going to lose. The kind of warfare that Europeans are engaged in is a warfare where they do not declare it a war. Essentially, they steal our minds from us so that we do not know how to think intelligently, and then they brutalize us in warfare without telling us that there's a warfare that's going on, and we are a very helpless, hapless victor that gets destroyed. And even when they're not successful at destroying us, they never lose anything. So it's a very comfortable, easy war for them because we're not protecting ourselves. We haven't looked and said, oh, the white's trying to destroy us, well, I'm going to go destroy you. So any initiative, like for instance, they want to kill black children. So they set up an industry of music that tells our children to murder each other. And then they put poor drugs into our community and give them to our children to sell to one another. And then lock our children up and make them do these extremely long periods of time in prison based on the drugs that they put in our communities. It's all orchestrated. Now, normally, if a people are conscious that someone is trying to destroy their children, well, they say, if you destroy my babies, then maybe we don't have the sophistication or money to go after Europeans and go and pour drugs into their community. So maybe we just go into hospital wards where little white babies are being born and just start shooting babies. Maybe we would go and go into schools and have, you know, anytime just randomly across the country, send four brothers in masked armory and go into a little white school and just start shooting all the children. In other words, we don't have the sophisticated measures to put their children on Ritalin and classify them as ADHD and then make them drug addicts at a young age and then sophisticatedly walk them into drug use as adults and kill them in that manner. If we recognized that it was happening, we would use whatever means we had to kill their children, which would do either of two things. It would either intensify the war, or it would make them say, okay, let's stop messing with their children. But the type of warfare that we're facing is a very sophisticated warfare. A good example is Haiti. Whites have been trying to do something about the nation of Haiti, the single independent black nation in the Western Hemisphere, since 1804 when it was declared independent. And what they have done now, as opposed to going in directly and bombing Haiti like they did in the early 1900s, in 2005, again in 2009, I think it was, I mean in 2000 and then 2005, instead of doing it like that, they bombed the fault line in Haiti, created an earthquake that killed 100-something thousand people, and then blame it on God and natural disasters. But they kill 150-something thousand people in a day. But because we're not conscious of what's going on, they're able to get away with killing 150,000 people with no ramifications or no repercussions. And the children, they're sending them all across the world, sexually violating them. They're sending armed teams, the Europeans around in the communities, murdering black people in Haiti. They're preparing now to get governments like China, the United States, and various other governments to go in and take the land and begin to build on the land so that they systematically steal the people's government from them and make Haiti a playground for the United States and various other countries around the world who invest basically in the slaughter of the Haitian people. This is all racial warfare where they're slowly but surely killing millions of black people around the world. They're going into places like Ethiopia, and they're building dams so that downstream the people who relied on that water no longer get that water, and now hundreds of thousands of people die. The Chinese go into Ethiopia and buy, quote-unquote, water rights to certain regions, and rich criminal entities, individuals in Ethiopia will sell them those rights. And when they do it, they sit down and calculate that, okay, it's going to be 170,000 Ethiopians that are going to die because they no longer have rights to their own water in these rural areas. And the government says, so what, I got a fat check in my pocket. But it is done in a systematic fashion so that over the course of this year, maybe a million Ethiopians die here. And then in Nigeria, because of wars that we give them, that we create over diamonds and other resources, maybe another 2 million people die here. And then in the Congo, 5 million people die here. And so they're systematically eradicating black people off of the African continent, with the intent of leaving America, now that the Hispanics, who are the descendants of the Native Americans, have gotten themselves to the position where they're flooding this country and they're running the Europeans out. The Europeans realize that, this is their prediction. Their prediction is that the Hispanics are soon going to have the type of numbers where they can launch a physical aggression against the whites. And they've already calculated that black people and Hispanics are going to join together. They've been trying to get us to fight with one another, but it has not been working at the level they wanted to work. Hence, they've made the decision they got to pack up and leave. Here's their problem. They cannot leave America intact, because if they leave the American continent intact, North and South America, black people and the descendants of the Native Americans, now call themselves Hispanics, will have access to the strongest military on the planet. And we can seize this thing and wage war on Europe. They are not going to do it. So what they've been doing, they've been outsourcing all these jobs across seas. They've been spreading all the American resource across seas. They've been dumbing down the American people, dumbing down the people in the schools. They do not want to lose this country and leave behind, when they lose it, educated, professional, armed, red man and black man and woman that can launch war against Europe. So they're trying to tank this country, and as they tank it, reoccupy Africa, this time with a black population that has been decimated and wiped out, temporarily used for slave labor and then exterminated, and then take the African continent, and that'll be their continent. And in order to do it, they're putting out all kind of movies talking about our African ancestor, putting the idea that we're all one people. They're putting out these terms, humanism. We all are the human family. It's only one race. That is to legitimize their right to go places they have no right to be. And to take the dead person, who even when you're dead, in the mentality that Africans have today, if we saw whites coming into Africa, they have a problem with it. Well, now they're giving us the arguments to explain their approach on our people so that we have Negroes that when people like ourselves say whites are attacking Africa, no, it's the human family. They're coming to help Africa. It's good for Africa. You know, these idiots will sit there and actually support the European invasion into their own homeland. That is a basic logistical outlay of what we're facing. Sophisticated weaponry, sophisticated ability to create what appear to be natural disasters but are not natural disasters. Thus, being able to kill millions of people at one time without any repercussions because they can say, oh, it's an act of God, even though these acts of God never happened in these particular regions ever in the history of the world, as far as we know, on this level. But all of a sudden, God wants to kill black people in certain regions that whites want the access to the resources, but God ain't killing the white folks just messing up the planet Earth. It's a very ridiculous position, but the technology is at that level. So the question that the young lady asks is, how do you counter war? That is the war that whites are waging against us, dumbing our people down, creating inaccurate paradigms of world love and world peace and we are the world and let's sleep with white folks and love everybody while they systematically murder, torture, rob, and kill black people because we're dumb. So how do we counter that? First of all, we can't be dumb. In order not to be dumb, we must teach. We must properly educate our people to who our enemies are and how they operate, hence the cows. What does it do? It teaches black people what's really going on. It gives black people some answers in our everyday lives how to counter racism, and, as we're talking about now, a more global perspective of what we're facing and how we counter it. So first, we have to begin to be honest and understand what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a race that is trying to kill us, and it needs to be removed from this planet. That is the proper resolution because they've had thousands of years to get it right, and they've shown that they do not want to get it right. Right for them is our death and our demise. The world, the planet, will be a better place without them. So that is the solution. The question is, how do you go about putting something like this in place with a dead people whose natural inclination it is to try to love everybody, and even further, who have been trained to you have to create a new paradigm, which means a new way of thinking. And then you have to wait to supplement your new way of thinking. And everything has to go, all of the things that we teach our children, all of the things that we do in our time that we spend what we call entertainment, everything we do that we call extracurricular activities, everything must be done with a common theme in mind, even if the people, our children who are involved in it, don't know what that theme is. And that theme is that it is our job as black people to bring an end to white tyranny and an end to white life on planet Earth. Now, we're saying it now, I have to be the sacrifice, someone has to say it. But as it relates to how do we wage this war, we don't all say it over and over again. How do you do it? You do it so that when you have a basketball team of young men and they're playing on the basketball team, you teach them, y'all have got to be the best. You better not go out here and lose to these white boys. I want you to beat these whites in everything that you do in life. If it's a test, if it's in basketball, anything you do, you got to be twice as good at them, and you never lose to them under any circumstances. Even if you got to cheat, you never lose to no white folks. And you drill that into your children's head, this competitiveness. Why? Because at some point in their life, they grow up competitive existence. They don't need to handle that at a young age, but you feed them that which they need so that they see their enemy as somebody white, and they become competitive in everything that they do. Then there's another piece that you do. You attach everything bad, everything that you can think of as bad, you classify it as white. Everything that is good and decent, you classify it as black. And we raise our children in that manner. So when your child comes in and lies about something, and you're looking at, you're lying. Are you being a little European? I thought you were an African. I am black. No, you're not. You're lying to me. And only whites lie. Because that's their nature and that's their character to lie. Black people try never to lie because that's not our character. Are you going to be white or you going to be black? I want to be black, but tell me what happened and tell the truth if you're going to be an African. Otherwise, you can just go ahead and be a European. You make the European mentally in the minds of our children and everybody. We paint everything bad black. When we say death, when we go to funerals, we should all go in white. Or if we don't all go in white, we should have something white that represents death. We should have something white that always, whenever we're saying something white, it should be bad. Or you tell a little white lie. A white lie means you're trying to trick somebody. You're trying to destroy somebody. We create the world that we want based on the outcome that we need. How else do you do it? When things like competitive sports, boxing, you always root for the black person against the white. Always. I don't care how much you like the white individual in basketball, in any sport, particularly something like boxing. And we have to begin to start using these things. They might seem small, but using them as leverage to encourage our youth to be competitive with whites. So that when Floyd Mayweather goes out there and is going out to fight this white boy, instead of us being in the middle on it, every black person, even though Floyd Mayweather may be a Negro, but we as black people get together and party at our homes, and we're talking about, you know, we're rooting on behalf of a black man to destroy this white boy. And everything we talk about is this: how black men, when you put the black man up against the white boy, let's show you how it's done. And we encourage our children to think about the world that way, so that when he knocks that white boy out, it does not represent Floyd Mayweather as an individual. It represents the power of black people to be better, stronger, and capable of defeating whites in battle. Everything we do should operate that way. If we have daughters, then when we're outside and we see our children misbehaving, then we look at them and say, see, when you grow up, young lady, you're going to be the kind of mother, you're not going to have your children acting like that because they're not acting like Africans. No, you're going to have them be strong Africans. And you teach your daughters, the people, you show them Gus, you let them listen to Gus T. Renegade Show. You let them see the Irritated Genie. You let them see Dr. John Henry Clark. You let them see Dr. Khalid Abdul-Muhammad. You show them this and say, those are the type of sons that you're going to raise. They're never going to be afraid of anything. They're going to be decent, respectful young men. Those are the kind of sons you're going to raise. You show her women like Sister Nefertari and Queen Mother Moores and Harriet Tubman. You teach them about these people, and you teach her this is the kind of child you're going to raise, so that every black girl understands that it is part of her responsibility to raise decent, good black children that are going to help us wage war against the European. Even if you don't say those particular words, which some of us can, particularly in the privacy of our homes, the idea is that the entire construct that we create, whether we say it or not, all goes to the same direction. So, for instance, if you look at George Washington, if you break it down to raw bones, George Washington was a killer. What he did is went out there, got mad at some British, because he didn't like their rules and started killing British. He's a murderer. That's what he was. He's a basic, fundamental murderer. But when whites have finished with his story, white male, he is a white god. Every street is Washington Street. They take their greatest fighters and killers. They make them, give them a nostalgic value. They cleanse the killing part and paint them as great men, but you never lose the fact that they was out there fighting and killing. It just becomes so cleanly that it is acceptable. Every single one of our people that has done something great, Nat Turner, for instance, he needs to become such a great person that he is a god. He's almost worshipped. If you say something about Nat Turner negative, somebody punch you in your face because they feel like you done stepped on their ancestors, and they don't even know how to deal with that kind of thing. And it should be so across the board that even a Negro was offended if somebody white said something about Nat Turner. I mean, a complete Negro who doesn't really understand what it means to be an African, they think of themselves an African-American, they're just a Negro, you know. They wouldn't like this conversation we're having. But we should be so diligent about making the strongest fighters and killers of our people represented as the greatest and highest level of being a black being, that when a black person hears about that person, all they can think of is that this is the kind of person I want to be like. So when they think of Nat Turner, they think of, you know, sure of God. This is like a son of God. They have the same feeling about him that they would have about Jesus, for those who are Christians, or Allah, I mean Muhammad, for those who are Muslims, where we worship Harriet Tubmans. We worship the people who fought for us, not the ones like Martin Luther King who wanted to go around and love white folks. And what we have to do in this process, I got to be honest, we have to begin to vilify people like Martin Luther King. Anybody that tries to teach black people to love our mortal enemies, we have got to change the diagram, how it works, change the paradigm. If a person was fighting against white aggression, we should show them the greatest sense of love and appreciation. We need to demonize those who fought on behalf of whites or fought and tried to tell our people to love whites so much so that nobody in our community wants to be compared with people like this. That the idea of wanting to date a European or be friends with a white individual or go out to your people and talk about loving some white folks and holding hands with them becomes such an ugly thing that even people who believe it on the inside won't even say it out loud because they know that they'll take such great criticism, and it's painted in the minds of black people so ugly that no one wants to participate in it. And in that regard, I'd like to create a paradigm shift as we speak today. I want black people to begin to look at the world in a different way, because another part of how we counter this war, we have to begin to have rules and agreed upon means of how we spend our energy. And in saying that, I'm saying that as it relates to black people, there are two major categories that we need to put black people in. One of them is what I call the upside-down pyramids. If you can imagine a pyramid which lays on a wide base and has a point at the top, being upside down with a point at the bottom and it's trying to stand on a point, obviously it's going to fall because it can't stand up. Upside-down pyramids are Uncle Toms who do whatever white folks want to do and snitch on our people. They're cracker lovers, you know, Negroes that want to date white folks and love white folks and bring white folks to black events. Just Negroes who love the slave master so much, they just want to just, they wish they were white. Just complete coons. Degenerate, black degenerates. We got a whole movement out here now with black people who, under the guise of trying to be revolutionary, all they give you is the N-word, the MF word, and I'm not saying we don't curse anything. I'm not saying we're never vulgar, but my point is, what they're doing is very cleverly shifting and trading in what has traditionally been black warfare, which is I'm decent, the cracker's no good, I'm going to go destroy him, to I'm a degenerate and I'm going to make the war. Look how degenerate I could be as I talk about white folks. It's a real clever trick that's being waged on our people by individuals out here, and all you have to do to know is just listen. If a person, and I'm going to give a good example of what a black degenerate does. This is how a black degenerate operates. Imagine if we were in the desert and we were thirsty and we needed water. And I got water, and the black degenerate got water. Now, here's the thing. For whatever reason, the black degenerate likes to pee in a cup and pour his water in and drink that water. That's how he likes to drink his water. I don't drink my water like that. But when we go to the people, you starving. The black person who cares about you pours you a little bit of water. Maybe they can't pour you a lot because they need some for themselves, but they give you a little water so you can drink it. But now the black degenerate will give you water, but they pee in it first. So they give you something that has value, sustainable value, it does. But they got to pee in it first. So you're happy to get the water because you need that water. But it's filthy, though. So you got to ask yourself the question, okay, the one thing, if that's how they like their water, why do they got to pee in my water to give it to me? Why does someone have to call you the N-word to tell you that the white folks are your enemy? Why does someone have to curse every other word to tell you that we have to destroy whites? I'm not saying that that's not how they talk, but if they're coming to our people and they know that there are many sophisticated, serious black people out there who don't want their children to hear that, but they want their children to hear the whites are the enemy because they need them to know that, then why are you peeing their water before you give it to them? It means that you're more concerned about not changing and bettering yourself and cleaning yourself up than you are about really saving black people. So because there's such, we're in a valley of dry bones now, and like I said, our people are dead, and they need a message. Instead of trying to become what our people have in the past, Marcus Garvey, Harriet Tubman, all the greats in the past have stepped themselves up, have sacrificed many things in order to give our people the best that they can give them. No, they weren't perfect, but they sacrificed. We have a group now that don't want to sacrifice nothing. They don't want to do nothing better. They don't want to become better. They want to remain degenerates, hip-hoppers running around here being just complete degenerates. But then read a couple of books and give you some information because they know you're starving for information. And what's happening is, out of our lack of understanding of what they're really giving us, we take it. But we're taking this urinated water, but we don't realize eventually somebody's going to stop pouring water in and just continue to pee. Because white folks will give you water with urine in it. If somebody loves you, it don't matter if they like water with urine in it, they would never pee in your cup. And what I'm saying is that's what we're getting out of here, and that's one of these upside-down pyramids. Upside-down pyramids are homosexuals, pedophiles that rape our children. My point with the upside-down pyramid is to make it this. These individuals in our community are a complete waste of time for us. We're wasting our time when we sit around talking to these individuals and trying to act like we're going to work with these individuals. Many of us got maybe a parent that's homosexual. I'm not saying that you should not try as much as you can to try to do what you can to help that person, but I am saying this. If you're trying to take that Uncle Tom Christians, Muslims, and when I say Muslims, I mean non-Nation of Islam, because the Nation of Islam has been a revolutionary organization for the most part. But I'm saying Christians, Muslims, and Jews, these are other upside-down pyramids. Any members of our community who have committed themselves and tied themselves to the biblical cause of one group of our enemies, for the most part, are going to be useless. They're not going to help us. And when we spend an inordinate amount of time talking to these individuals, trying to convince them to wake up, as opposed to like you do on the cows, you say, if you think that this is constructive, please listen. If you don't think this is constructive, then do not listen. So all of these upside-down pyramids have gotten a message. If you don't think that this dialogue is good for us, then tune the dialogue out. And what I'm saying is we got to get more like the cows on our everyday life. Instead of spending, there's some of us out here that can honestly say we spend 1,000 hours trying to argue with Negroes to turn them into Africans. Why aren't we spending 20 hours, or maybe they say spend 100 hours with Negroes trying to turn them into Africans, and then 300 hours talking to Negroes, seeing which ones we think could be Africans, and then the rest of the 600 times talking to Africans and revolutionaries, such that we can spend our time with the people who think like us so that we can build something. We spend too much time with individuals that's not going to build nothing because they're caught up in all this upside-down pyramid behavior, and thus we don't have any institutions. Let's spend our time with one another. Now, those are the upside-down pyramids. I said there were two groups. The other group is the right-side-up pyramid. And these are the people in our community that we should spend 90% of our non-work-related, and I say that non-work-related because when we go to work, you got to be with whoever's at the job, I mean, unless you work for yourself. And even then, sometimes you're going to have people to come in to purchase whatever good or service that you buy that may be a Negro or not, and you can't control that. But I'm saying non-work-related, we should say we should have a percentage of our time. Some people may 75% may be yours. Some people may say 50%. Some people say 90%. But the vast majority of our non-work time that we don't go to for where we get to pay, most of us on a plantation job, should be spent around other pointed pyramid people, meaning people who are out here at least partially similar in their thinking that want to do good for black people. And on that pointed right side up pyramid, there are three levels of people. The bulk of the people that are out here that can actually help our people, we're going to call them civilians. And what a civilian is a black person who, if they get good information that they can understand and can tell us the truth, then they will try to do the best they can with that information. So, for instance, a civilian is a person, they may or may not be conscious. But if you tell them about the history of Nat Turner, then they say, you know what, I'm going to teach my child about that. Well, if you say, yeah, you know, we're having a play like Sister Nefertari and the Children of Southampton did this weekend, I have to say in the midst of this conversation, it was really the best cultural event I've ever been to in my life was the Nat Turner Day weekend celebration 2010. I have never experienced anything like this, and I want y'all brothers and sisters to give Sister Nefertari and the Children of Southampton so much love and appreciation, and I want y'all to come out to everything that she does. I'm telling you, I've never experienced anything like that. And they had a play by Brothers Keeper, the baddest brothers on the planet in terms of music, and it was called the Nat Turner African Insurrection Musical, and I've never seen anything like this in my life. I'm so inspired behind that now, I cannot stop talking about it. I've never seen anything like this. But the civilian is a person that would come to that and hear that and bring their child there. They may not be committed to racial warfare per se, but if they see that you are, they will buy your products. They will teach their children that. They're a person like many of our grandmothers that used to tell us, always walk with dignity and have pride in yourself. You know, wear clean clothes and make sure you present yourself well. You know, always bathe before you go to school. Just decent people who want to be decent. If they see that whites are mistreating you, they might go to the school and say, I'm not going to let you mistreat my son. And, you know, if this is racist, I'm not going to let this happen. It means a black person who, again, is not necessarily committed to racial warfare, but who the more information they get that is good that they can understand, the more they will try to incorporate that into their lives and teach it to their children and help our people go in the right direction. So those are civilians. Then you have the second level, which is the lesser number of these people because it's more difficult. But these people we call Maroons. And Maroons are people who have dedicated their lives to fighting white racial aggression and fighting on behalf of their race. They have dedicated their lives. They have said, the rest of my life I'm going to spend fighting. That's just who they are. And the Maroons make it the vast majority of Chris Garvey, Robert Eagle Williams, they were Maroons. These are people who they're going to fight. Gloria Richardson is a Maroon. You know, these people who are Geronimo Pratt, you know, brother done all those years in prison and still comes out and speaks on behalf of our people and looks out for the interests of our people. H. Rob Brown, you know, these people in our community, Winnie Mandela, are people who, as long as they live, are going to always be trying to raise their voice to help better our plight and are going to fight white racial aggression the best way they can with whatever they have. Those are the Maroons, and like, again, I say, the vast majority, Harriet Tubman, of our great leaders who committed themselves to our well-being as a race have been Maroons. And so every black person, if they choose to and commit themselves to this, can reach this level of Maroon. And as long as they stay committed to their race, they don't have to be perfect, but as long as they stay committed to their race and fight for their people, they can be a Maroon. They're on the right side of the pyramid. And then the pyramid has what they call a black capstone. And Kim and I ancestors had that. It represented the pineal gland. And it's the smallest point of the pyramid. It's at the top, and it's a pointed part. And at the capstone of our pyramid, we have a group of people that we call Haitians. Now, a Haitian doesn't have anything to do directly with your bloodline going to our brothers and sisters on the Haitian continent. But a Haitian, you cannot aspire to be a Haitian. You're either Haitian or not. You're either born a Haitian or not. But most of our people who are born Haitian, because of being miseducated, never choose to do what it is that a Haitian is born to do. And what a Haitian is, it is a black person who is born with a void, that void of that African part of ourselves that loves all people and that has a respect for all forms of life. For some reason they were born, they didn't have that. Whatever the reason, I don't know why it just happens. But what the Haitian has is a committed hatred and venom towards whites, such that when other people feel that things that are happening to white, like 9/11, when people say, oh, I mean, it was terrible, I understand what you're saying, but that was horrible, the Haitian, it doesn't even cross their mind. They just know that a bunch of crackers died, it just makes them feel good. They thrive off the idea of destroying and killing injustice. They want to see injustice destroyed. A Haitian could be a 5-year-old boy who just standing next to a white boy, and before you know, he punched him in the face over some argument. He said, he's a little white boy, so what, I stole him. He don't know why he hit him, but in his soul, he understands that he's supposed to be at war with the white race. And even though it's not our nature, there are some black people who are born with the nature, like the lions, and know that he's supposed to hate the hyena. He don't have to have no long soliloquies like we're doing now. He don't have no long explanation. If you give him a basic, fundamental history of what whites have done to black people and tell him it's okay, there's supposed to be people out there that are Haitians, and you're supposed to destroy this white boy, and you're supposed to do what it is you're supposed to do to deal with this problem, you have released that person into a brand new world. I'm going to tell you, most of the Haitians in our community end up in prison, committing suicide, race traitors, and I'm going to tell you why. They end up in all these various different things. Because no one does what our brother Kamau Kambone does. No one gives them permission to be born and live a life where they live in tune to the nature they were born with, which is to bring war and terror to the white race. And so they go around in life, and if they ever get to the point of trying to fight whites and everything, they're always on the nth degree. You know, they're always more excessive than the rest of us. And so they generally don't run into anybody who sees the world the way they do. So if they got parents that are integrationist Negroes and they want to fight against whites, the parents convince them that they're evil, and to not make their parents upset, they reside themselves to living a life of coonery or being acceptable to their parents, and so they might marry somebody white. In order to avoid dealing with what they really want to do, they might go to the nth degree and go over to the other side. Or they may just be quiet. And when they're in conversations, they don't hang out with a lot of people and stuff because they really can't hang out with a lot of people because every conversation for them ends up, the slightest, it doesn't matter, you talk about basketball. At the end of the basketball conversation, somehow they turn into, we need to go out and do some of these crackers. And so they have a hard time being around people because that's the only thing that's inside of them. And so they end up being kind of weird people or other ones of them because there is no way to properly channel that Haitian spirit inside of them that wants to wage war except being a criminal. They pick up a gun and they go rob people in our community. They become gangbangers. They're out here doing killing and all this stuff. It's in their blood, but they don't feel right, but they just don't know why. Because they know they're supposed to be doing it, but they don't understand that they're doing it the wrong way. They're being self-destructive. So many of them end up in prison or dead before they actually realize that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. They're just doing it the wrong way. These are the saddest, sorrowful people in our community because they have the greatest job to do, but they have no one to teach them and to fuel them how to do this job. Well, they hadn't before. Now they do. And so we see we got two pyramids, and the person has to understand. Again, you know, when I was talking earlier, and I put that example out when I talk about how they murder our babies and what it would be like if somebody went into a white baby ward and just started killing the baby and throwing their babies out the window. If that strikes you as, I mean, that sounds crazy, then you're not a Haitian, and that's okay. Don't be mad about it. You're a civilian, or maybe you're a Maroon. And you have to see that the whites are coming to hurt you in order for you to feel justified in hurting them. That's okay. Everybody don't have to play everybody's position. But if you heard me saying that and you sit there smiling and you're joking and you feel good about it, even if you couldn't physically do it, you might be a Haitian. It might be in you because you know what needs to be done. That's where you were born. That's what moves your soul when you hear it and see it. When you heard Omar Thornton went out there and shot them 8 white folks and you were just happy, you were elated. You sat at home and smiled. You were overwhelmed so greatly that you couldn't even, you really didn't have a word to say anything. You were just so happy. You couldn't wait to call somebody and tell them, you might be a Haitian. You might be a Haitian. And my thing is this, there's room for every decent black person on this pyramid. If you're a civilian, your job is not to do the same thing that the Maroons and the Haitians' job is. Now, let me talk about what people's tasks are. If you are a civilian, you're not a killer, per se. Sure, you'll defend yourself if something happens to you, but I'm saying that's not what drives and drives your soul to fight, Eve. You're not necessarily a fighter, per se. But your job is to create the world that we're going to have once we've dealt with these Europeans. Meaning, if you're a sister and you are a civilian, it means that you're not going to be doing no, first of all, you're on the right side, up right side pyramid. You're not no integrationist. You don't believe in marrying the white folks. You're not with none of that stuff. You're not no running out here trying to force our children to believe in some white Christ or any other kind of foreign religion, all like that. Even if you're a part of it, you don't, you know, you're black before you're anything else. And it means that when your husband comes home or your significant other, you cook for him. Man, we love to eat. We love good food our women be making. Nobody cook like no black woman. You create a world that's a heaven for a man. You don't beat the man up and fight with him over nothing all the time. He enjoys coming home so that he can see you. You are a life to him. You are God to him. You lift his spirit so greatly that he don't like being away from you for a long time. You create the world that he wants so that when he goes out there and deals with these whites, the world you have created is in such greater contrast to what he has to deal with these white sharks on his job every day that it pushes him to understand, it pushes the mentality of all of our people to say, we got to do something about these white folks. You, if you're a black child, you go to school, you work hard, you study well, you come home and do the things that make your parents proud, you learn your black history. When you're out there doing stuff, if you're in sports, you compete competitively. You're not a sore loser, but you don't have to be a sore loser because most of the time you win because you're driven to win. You encourage other black people to do well. You don't try to pull your brothers and sisters down. As a black child, you live a life like that, and so it's a pleasure for your mother to come home and hear that you got good grades that day. You got an A on your report card. You are a contributing member to your race. The little sister Justice here, who's on the radio asking questions. How do you think it makes a black man like me feel to hear our little sister involved in racial uplift? It makes me feel great because I say I'm never going to die because our children are coming behind us, and she's going to do much better than the irritated genie ever tried to do because she's going to be better than me, and it makes me feel good. That's what the youth can do. That's what the civilians can do. You do your job, you know. The brothers, if you're a brother, man, you go work hard every day so that your wife don't need to have nothing. You always there. You're making sure that the home is protected. You should have your peace and ready to pop if anybody come and try to harm your family. You should always be letting your woman know how much you care about her. And you should not only do it with words, but with consistency. So that this woman says, you know, they talk about there's no good black men out there, but I know I have a good man. You know, he's there, he takes care of his family, he's reliable. If he gives his word, he keeps his word. He's involved in trying to uplift his community, and he still has time for his family. He's a responsible, decent black man. My point is, when we, and this is the civilian's job, to create a decent race of people that know their history, that love themselves, that recognize that they have white enemies and want to do something about it. It is the civilians who make the Haitians and the Maroons. I go back to the example I gave before about George Washington. It is the whites who teach their children about George Washington, who fought for America, that create the next George Washington doing today. The civilians in our community should be the ones, as teachers and educators and family members of fathers and mothers, teaching their children about Harriet Tubman, about Nat Turner, about John Jacques Dessalines and Boot Mondetti, the fighters and the warriors, not Martin Luther King, not W.E.B. Du Bois, not these Uncle Tom Negroes, but teaching them about real fighters so that our children are driven to be fighters, teaching them about George Washington Carver, a genius, so that they can strive to be geniuses. These are the things that we need from our civilians to create the world in our community. We should be able to go to a black community anywhere in this country and be feeling right at home as soon as we walk in. How you doing, brother, sister? Come on over. We having a party tonight. You want to do that? Or if you want, you know, whatever it is you into, you should be able to go to the black community. People tell you where you can go, where you can stay. And to us, it's like our own little heaven. Such that every time we leave that black community, we deal with these crackers, we realize that this world cannot continue this way because these crackers are the problem, because we see heaven when we're around each other, and we see nothing but hell when the cracker pops up. When the police pop up, nothing but hell. When the attorneys and the lawyers pop up, nothing but hell. whenever we have to deal with this establishment and this system of racial white supremacy, we see the demon. But we don't see so many black demons that we start getting confused and thinking that we're the problem. That's what the civilian's job is. Now, for the Maroons and the Haitians, your word for the 21st century is one. Because we can't be going around like the irritated genie with some damn death wish trying to get itself killed talking about exterminating the white race. Y'all can't be talking like that. Somebody had to do it. I made the sacrifice. Okay, I've done it. They're going to do whatever they do with what I'm doing. Your word is resolution. We're not looking for rebellion. That's good. We rebelled a lot of times. That's good. We've done a great job rebelling. We're not looking for rebellion. Revolution, great thing. Complete constructive change. Sounds good, nice, yet. No, we're not looking for revolution. It's a nice thing, good, it works, but that's not what we're looking for. The problem of the white race and white racial aggression against black people has been going on too long. We want complete, absolute resolution, which means we want the problem fixed. We don't want the problem no more. We don't want to have no more discussions about it. We want to end it and resolve it. Whatever comes after that, who cares? That'll be something for those generations to deal with. Let us finish the problem so that we have done our job. And as it relates to our discussion, who are the people that are going to resolve it? These are the Maroons and the Haitians. So let me talk to you now and tell you what your job is. For those of you who wish to take it, and understand, this is not something, the way that this war is launched, we are in a race war where they're murdering us by the millions. We have no time to talk about if they do, if then. The war has already been launched. Your job is to do a few things. One, we cannot have any success with pedophiles and homosexuals running around in our community. The civilians can offer clinics to help our people who've been sexually abused deal with the pain and try to come out of those lifestyles, blah, 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 blah. Okay? The Maroons and the Haitians, that ain't your job. Your job is to get rid of the problem. We cannot have sexual degenerates running around our community that will target our children. No man is going to leave his home and leave some homo pedophile in his house with his wife and his daughter and his son to go fight a battle against the white race, knowing in the back of his mind that his wife's going to get raped, his daughter's going to get raped, and his son going to get raped when he leaves that house. He got to shoot the fag before he leaves. I mean, it's just real. I mean, if he don't, he's not a responsible man. So what I'm saying is we hate this. We hate that we have to hurt our own people. But at the end of the day, like in the zombie movies, you know, the zombie is a zombie. But when the zombie, that's your brother. But when he gets bit by the zombie, he ain't your brother no more. He looked like your brother on the outside. But whatever that zombie did bit to him, he's different now. And all he's looking around to do is go around and make new zombies. He's lost the inside. It is dry. It is bone dry. Ain't nothing left inside. And these predators, these homosexuals, these pedophiles running around our community are going around seeking somebody else in our community to drag into this stuff. So somebody's got to say, you know, like you do with the zombies, he's not your brother no more. Pow! I mean, that's how it works. I mean, I hate to say it. And what we have to understand, if you're a civilian, that's too much for you. It ain't your job to do it then. But it's your job to let the Maroons and the Haitians know that that person over there messed with children. Hey, that dude over there, he ain't right, man. He around here, he homosexual, he bringing that stuff around here. And then those members of our community that are going to clean up this community have to understand we don't have prisons, we don't have millions of dollars to take somebody through some long process of trying to get them back on the right track sexually. We just don't have that. You know, it sounds nice, but it's silly. That's what Negroes talk about, or people that don't look for resolution. As real true Africans, somebody got to clean up the problem. So some of our Maroons and Haitians got to say the sexual degenerates have got to be made to stop doing what they're doing. And the only way to do that is with death. So those that actually see what's happening and say, I'm out of it, wonderful. We don't have to go chase down somebody for something they did yesterday. All of us have room for transition and change. But for those who are committed to a life of sexual backwardness, they got to go. Somebody got to do that. Somebody's got to say, no, we may not have a massive army to fight the white race, and we don't have time to try to build one, to be honest with you. So then what I need brothers and sisters out there to do, and I want you to listen, I'm mostly talking to brothers. Some of y'all brothers got to say, because what you've been saying is, I wish there was a group out here that I could join and we could go out here and bang on these crackers. We can go out here, these police officers that have murdered our people, make a list of them. I wish you could go out here and deal with the problem that people have been facing. with white supremacy. So many people that have been these whites that have been investing in prisons and giving our sons and daughters these long, extensive sentences in these prisons or what have you. We need to go deal with them. Or some of these whites that are investing in wars and African diamond wars and getting our people to get our sons and daughters chopped their, half their arms off their legs, we need to go out and deal with them. At any rate, you've been waiting for some group to join. Here's the problem. Black people are too immature, dishonest, untrustworthy, too addicted to drugs and alcohol, and too criminal in our behavior to try to go and build some army. Because sooner you do, somebody's going to switch. It don't make sense. What you do, you make a personal commitment. If you're the kind of man who is a Haitian or a Maroon, we are in need now of battlers. And the way we need you in the field is either individually or in very small groups. Do not try to grow your group. If it's three of y'all and y'all talk about this stuff all the time, y'all training, y'all shooting, you need to stop trying to look for something to join. You are the group. You take them three men, and in your good time, and in your good way, you bring our enemies to resolution. You figure out who it is you want to do. I don't care if they're random crackers. I don't care if it's the small hats who are orchestrating black death at the highest levels, if it's the entertainment industry, if you want to go out to them. I don't care how you do it. Just don't get caught. Because we don't have time for fathers to be lost from their homes, from their children, because you were sloppy. Don't be sloppy. Finish your jobs and take to task the jobs that need to be done at hand. Why do I say this? Because with two men, three men, no more than five, you can commit countless acts of racial aggression on behalf of black people without any real counteraction by white folks because they don't know who the hell is doing it. And what is beautiful about it, this is the way this war is going to get launched, is that every African on the other end of my voice that has this kind of soul and commitment and constitution in their soul that they can go out and do this, instead of waiting for somebody else, you can become part of the hidden army. That after 20 or 30 years or so of this kind of thing, there will be a collective mind of men, mostly, and some women, who have been going out in the field and doing that, what we call that good work. And once we have a collective mind of that, 20, 30 years down the line, once we've been teaching our children the things we're supposed to be teaching them, once we've been properly educating them, once in every city, you got 10 or 20 people who have been doing this for some time and have gotten into this and like doing it, we'll be of the mentality where we can build something in. We can talk about building on. There'll be people, so many like-minded people. There'll be so much room that's been created by these white folks trying to figure out how the hell they're going to stop this random stuff that's going on from happening. Since they can't blame it on any particular organization because there ain't no organization, they'll be so confused that they'll start trying to put things in place to stop it from happening. They'll start giving money for community organizations, and you can start expecting them to give handouts to try to make this stuff stop stopping. When they find out, they can't find out who's doing it because ain't nobody for you to tell because it's only one of you. You just one dude going around handling your business. So it's two of y'all going around, three of y'all going around doing what you need to do. In this process, some of you ex-military brothers who used to be in the military and you want to go do something, you got the training and everything, but you don't know what to do. This is what you need to do. First of all, civilians need to listen to this because maybe you don't go out here and do it, but you got a cover for us. You see a brother leaving the scene, a couple of pigs, white boy pigs on the ground, and you see him running left, and you happen to be driving up, and the police ask you which way did he go. You look at your wife and your daughter like, keep your mouth closed, and he went that way, point the other direction. No, you didn't do it, but you helped the Maroon and a Haitian live another day. They're working for you. You got to do that. You got to finance this thing. Well, you hear the AK to JDC, I need some money. We're trying to do a benefit. You know I ain't trying to do no benefit just to raise some money. There are things that got to be done. I can't get them done because I can't pay for them. Everything got a price. You got to help me get some money. I can't do everything. I'm getting sick of trying to carry my race on my shoulders. I ain't no elephant, man. I got to do everything. I got to do lecture. Then I try to do the plays here, and I got to try to inspire this. I got to do radio. Look, I don't want to do everything. I like everybody to do everything. Then I got to go out and stick the guys that need to be stuck to. Can I get a break? Can somebody else do something? You know, I'm being honest. You know, I'm being funny when I say it, but I'm really not being funny. I mean, I wish somebody else would get engaged. I don't have to do everything. I'm not an egomaniac. I'd be much happier with everybody getting involved. I don't have to do anything. I can sit at home and watch the thing on TV if it was that good, you know. I don't care how it happens. I just want to win. And I'm saying that to say we need people to help finance it. Some of y'all got money. When you see brothers like Cal, he say he needs the computer. Should have been somebody out there that got $3,000. I'm just going to send him $3,000. Just send him $3,000. Let him hear what he's doing. Don't waste time like this. You know what I'm saying? If you got the money, just give it to him. You got the money. You ain't going to do this. You don't have to. You're a civilian. You help us do it. There are those of us who want to get this thing done. And what I'm saying is we got to start finding ways to help, because when this begins to happen, what we're going to see is that, like I said, some of those military men, you can take some of these young brothers out here and train them. They don't have no home here. They got bad reputations in their community or gang life. Why not put that man in Nigeria and say, we want you to go to Nigeria, and we want you to set up something. Because, see, with an American mentality, a gang mentality in Nigeria, or maybe a different type of country, Ghana or somewhere, you can go with that American aggression, black American aggression, and because you're from America and get a little bit of financial resource and you hit hard, you can build some strong black nationalist type of enclave. You can go to a place like the Congo. A couple of these cats from L.A., man, these bangers, that's all they did is kill people all their lives. And but now they want to turn around, but they don't know what to do. They got education. They've been reading the books. They're listening to the cows. They want to do something different. They don't know what to do. Put them in another country and say, look, in the Sudan, the Arabs are raping and murdering black women by the thousands, taking their land. Put them down in the southern Sudan and say, your job is to defeat these Arab armies and return this whole country back to black people. He's going to give you a little bit of money and some guns. You got to get the rest of your own. The Arabs got money and water and everything else you need. We're going to start you off, and the rest is up to you. We got brothers out here who would love to go get a new start and a new beginning. Go to a place where they're not known for hurting their own people, but now they're fighting for their people. But they're fighting, that's what they know. And those people will not look at them as a gangbanger or as a thug. They'll look at them as liberators and heroes. And the ones that can leave their bad behavior, leave the N-word, leave the rape and all of that filth behind, but can go over there with a new mentality, a decency, but still banging. We can bang on these crackers all around the world. There's white folks that need that good work everywhere this planet exists. There needs to be constant resolution going on with black people, because whites have had 6,000 years of practice of killing us consistently. Every day they're finding a bigger and better way to kill us. Every day they're coming up with a new drug to kill us. Every day they're studying, learning our DNA structures, trying to create agents that they can drop in the water to kill our agents' stuff. Why aren't our scientists, what else is there for a black scientist to be doing but trying to find resolution? How do I create, as a black scientist, an agent that can assist my people in their righteous march for justice? Our people want justice, and we haven't been able to get it talking to the white folks. I'm a scientist. Can I find a way to do it? What is it that the problem is we talked about earlier, the paradigm? The whites have a paradigm of black genocide. And they're killing us, and they know that they are. But they've given us a paradigm of white love, where we love them while they're killing us. What we need today is a new paradigm. They want to kill us, but they're going to lose because we're going to kill them first. And now everybody has got to actively engage. If you're a civilian and you can't handle that, that's too heavy for you, then what you handle is the fact that black people are just going to take care of this. And once they finish, when they come home, they're going to have a nice community. And you make that nice community. You make those nice children that we want to love to come home to. You make an environment that's clean for us. And brothers, you build nice structures for us. Maybe you can't go out there and do this, but you can build a nice home, and you can lay down that strong foundation so that no matter how hard the storm hits, our people have good homes to live in. I don't care what you do, as long as you're helping, and as long as you understand that that is good work, and that it's understood that it's a righteous thing when black people spill white blood, because that's how we're going to get free. It ain't no situation we picked. But it's here, and now we have to find out how to engage in the process now. As there are brothers out there that are doing that, some people saying that's not going to get the thing solved. I don't know how it's going to get solved. It is not up to me to solve it. That's a racial thing for us to solve it. We know what needs to be done to get resolution. But I'm doing my part. That's what I'm saying. And that's what I want everybody to do. You're not supposed to go out there and point to somebody else and say, you're supposed to go do this, that, and the other. That's not how this race war works. Every individual says, what am I willing to do for my race? So if it's, I'm willing to have honest dialogue and open a forum so that our people can talk about what we're going to do to survive on planet Earth, then maybe Brother Gus does that. And we don't try to get Brother Gus to do anything else because that's what he does well. He stays in his lane, and every time he comes on the radio, he wins, and we win. Whether we agree with being said or not, at least we know that we're not further away from freedom. We're closer each time. Even if we don't agree with being said, we're closer because we know what's wrong then if it's not right. We always getting closer because he's playing his lane. Somebody has to do this, and it needs to be someone who does it well, so he does this. Irritated Jimmy, he breeds race war. He gives us race war. He creates the new world mentally that becomes the physical world. This is what he does. Every time we talk to him, he's encouraging us to stop looking at the world from the perspective of what's working and look at it from the perspective of what will work, which is the destruction of the white race. He's very definitive. He's given us the answers, and he beats us over the head with the same message in 250 million different ways over and over again until we get it. That's his job. Don't put me in a different lane. That ain't my lane. Well, brother, we need to build an economic structure. Well, that is not an economic structure. Why are you coming to me? I cannot carry the whole race on my back. We all got to do our part. Maybe it's going to be a civilian who builds an economic structure. Well, then it's up to the Maroons and the Haitians to make sure when he builds the economic structure, don't no small hats or no other crackers come in there and take it from them. That's our job. He built it for us, and then the white folks start coming in. He don't have the strength to tell them not to integrate. Well, you have the strength to say, no, we ain't going to integrate this. He drop a little of them coin in your pocket, and you take care of the integrationist whitey problem, you know? We got to start looking at it as it's all of our issue, white racial aggression. And we're going to each play our lane. I'm not as strong as the next brother, so when he decides out tonight to do something, I'm not going to. And appreciate what he does. I can make sure he always got a job. I can make sure if he comes in late tonight, I mean to tomorrow, and I read the paper, and I say, wow, man, that's some serious stuff going on out there. And he comes in late that day, I ain't got to ask him no questions. I know what happened. But I can not write him up for being late because he had some good work to do. And he did his good work, and he got in a little late. Now, I understand it. And matter of fact, I'm going to give him a raise on the job or give him some kind of award for something he might not even did. Who cares? Because we got to look out for each other. It's all of our jobs. We can't all do the same thing. Everybody's not a speaker. But some people can do some different things. Some people dance well. Well, when a sister has a Nat Turner insurrection musical, the dancer should be in the musical. Maybe you can't verbalize it in all these different ways, but you dance so well that the crowd is jumping like this is a dancing fool on stage. You've done your part. You've inspired our people to enjoy nationalism and the message that moves our people. Play your lane. A civilian, don't try to be more than you are unless you make the decision that you're no longer satisfied with being a civilian. You want into the war. You could be a Maroon. Don't mean you have to go out and physically do something, but it means that you committed to racial warfare. You're going to fight on behalf of your people. You know that whites are your enemy, and you're going to be consistent in that fight. You're Maroon now. You're not going backwards. You can't be a Haitian unless you're a Haitian. But if you're a Haitian and you want to see this beast destroyed, then you have to be active. There's no such thing as a non-active Haitian. There's no such thing. You know, the Haitian Revolution, you know, it was about bodies, man. Definitely, you know, they say that Toussaint Louverture used to be a very strategic general. He's one of the greatest generals in the history of the world. He would look at a fort and say, we need that fort to win this battle. I mean, to win this war, and then he would strategically move so they win the fort. And he would be like, we've done great, because strategically it was a great position to be in, and the enemy couldn't advance if they had that fort. They said John Jacques Dessalines was a very different man. He said John Jacques Dessalines would come back from a battle and say, how many of our men did they kill? And they would say 50, and he would drop his head and say, my God, this is horrible. He said, how many of their men did we kill? He said, 200. He said, great day for fighting men. He said, 200 Europeans, that means each man got 4 men. This is a wonderful day. Let's celebrate. He ain't caring nothing about all the strategic. He wants some bodies on this thing. He wants to be able to say, the whites know that we're not playing because we ain't talking about being nice to them. We're not being nice to our prisoners of war. We're not trying to show them how brilliant we are in battling savvy. Look, you're going to leave or you're going to pay a severe price for trying to oppress us. What we need to do is get this whole idea of trying to march for right, all this stuff out of our heads and say, even if we are out here marching, talking about for rights, that's not what we're doing. We're looking for resolution. This is just a strategy on the road to the final resolution. Anything that we're doing, even if we call it, you can still use terms like, what we want is freedom and justice, but that ain't what we're looking for no more because we made the definitive decision that whites can't be here anymore. So we really don't want them to pay for their crimes per se. Yeah, we're going to say we want reparations because reparations help us get resolution. They can find us, they can finance us to help us deal with them and give them final resolution. We might go out here and say, do you think that on the job, if they're giving whites a promotion degree that to a certain level that black people should get the same type of promotion and fairness? Of course we do. But at the end of the day, we want resolution. We don't even want to be competing with no whites for jobs. But in the interim, we fight on our own behalf. You pick your lane, you fight your fight, you fight it well. If you're into music, we've classified music differently now. There are different forms of music. One, of course, we start with our upside-down pyramid. We call it slave music. What is slave music? Slave music, gospel music. You listen to somebody sing about some Jesus. I surrender all. What do you mean you surrender all? You ain't even fought yet. You ain't going out fight there. You want to surrender for me? I don't want you surrendering for me. Don't I get the right good? When you out there singing to some white savior some songs promising that you will turn over the world to the European, that's slave music because you learned it on a slave plantation. You listen to some hip-hop bebop calling black men the N-word, my N-ness, my N-that. I don't care how conscious it sounds. If it's calling black people the N-word, I don't care how much they talking about slavery or nothing. They got a sister out there do a song called I'm the White Man's B. She starts a song off a Sister Aisha segment saying, I need a real N like Malcolm X. I want you to think for a minute. How would Malcolm X feel about a black woman calling him the N-word? Dancing a freaky dance using that kind of language. Would he want his daughter doing that? Come on, Malcolm. I want you to really see if Marcus Garvey would have invited these people out here doing that kind of stuff in the name of nationalism. How would Marcus Garvey feel about that? And then even if Marcus Garvey didn't agree with the Eritrea Virginia, I want you to ask it. Would he respect what the Eritrea Virginia is doing? I'm not saying I'm not perfect. I ain't saying that. I got a lot of dark stuff in my past. But I'm just saying I'm not out here trying to give you – I'm not peeing in your cup. You know what I'm saying? I'm not doing that. I'm trying to help you win. And if we got people out here that's giving us filth, it's all slave music. If you got some NWA that you listen to, N-word this, women are black, women are bees, shake your behind and all this, that's slave music. Then we have the right side up music. And on that, we have three levels of music. On the base of it, we have what we call music. And that just means that you got some sounds and maybe some singing with it, and it's just decent. Anybody can make music, white, black, orange, yellow, whatever. It's just music. Then you have a higher level of it. It's called black music. And black music is that Donny Hathaway, Young, Gifted, and Black. Black music is that strange fruit. Black music is anything that is non-integrationist talking about black people and our struggle. Get up, stand up, stand up for your rights by Bob Marley. You know, Public Enemy, some of them didn't fight the power. This is black music because it's about black people fighting for our freedom, or not just fighting, not particularly fighting. It's just something about black culture. Then you have the highest level of black of music, and that's African insurrection music. And more appropriately, I'd say fight the power. That would be a song that you consider African insurrection music, meaning music that inspires black people to fight against our white enemies. And that's like the only group that we have currently said is properly classified as African insurrection music is Brothers Keeper. And I promise you, brothers and sisters, they just dropped their new album. It's a double CD. And I'm not saying this because I like them. I ain't never heard nothing like this in my life, and you haven't either. You got to buy it. If you go to Warner Horizon, go to our store, inside of our store, you go to other products, you can buy the Brothers Keeper CD, double CD set. Or you can buy it, get this stuff. My point, The reason we say that it's only African insurrection artists we know is because they do not call black people the N-word. You may hear them use it in terms of saying what they used to say, how they used to think, or what whites call us, but they don't use that term to refer to our people. It is not filthy, and it is 100% from the beginning to the end, no matter what kind of beat, whether it's a gospel-sounding song, a reggae-sounding song, a hip-hop-sounding song, spoken word, it's all about fighting racism, white supremacy, and fall over from racism and white supremacy, how to repair our community, and how to fight white aggression against black people. And so we classify them as African insurrection music. And that's the highest form of music because it is the essence of the world that we live in today as we face racial annihilation. We need to get up, look our enemies in the eye, and destroy them before they destroy us. And so we need something that righteously provides the kind of indignation that we need and resistance to white domination of African people. And so if someone creates that, it has to be the highest form of music because it's the highest level of threat to African people on this planet. So those are your three forms of right side up music. You got music, and African insurrection music. Here's the beautiful thing. Everybody can't be a Haitian, which is at the top, because you have to be born with a blade. Got to be the missing piece of the African in you, so either that happens or not. But everybody can be in the room. But in this case, the highest level of music is African insurrection music. And if you commit to completely throwing away this sexual degeneracy, completely throwing away the N-word and trying to destroy your own people, and you commit to racial warfare music, you can be an African insurrection music artist. You got to have talent, too. You can't just be trying and don't have the talent. But you got the talent and the message that our people need, and you identify the whites as the enemy, and you tell our people to go deal with this problem and inspire them properly to do it, then that's African insurrection music. Anything that's good for black people and is about black people and is non-integrationist that falls short of that, it's still black music, and black music is good enough. If you're doing black music, you're doing more than 90% of the people in the entertainment industry. Matter of fact, probably 99% of them, because I don't know who's doing black music right now. And then even if you're doing music, that's cool because it's decent. It's not hurting our people. But please don't do slave music. What we're doing today, I know I'm doing a lot of talking, but this is new paradigm. This is new way of thinking. This is the new world you're stepping into. We're entering the world of race war. And since our young sister asked the appropriate question, how do we counter war? How do we wage war against our enemies who seem to have the advantage on our people at this point? I had to take a little bit of time and give some instructional dialogue as to how to wage this war. So if you're an aggressive person, we told you, pick your lane. Figure out how to use your aggression. If you're an entertainer, now you know and have some idea how to use your entertainment. If you're an intellectual, now you know how to use your intellectualism. For my intellectuals who are debaters and you debate and scholars using your information, basically what you do is you go out every day and talk to people and you create the potential that a black person may engage in this war because you give people information constantly and perspective and opinions that force them to look at the world different than what they've been doing. Many of us are like that. Many of the people that listen to this show will fit into that category. What do? Your object is to find any number of clever, intelligent ways to convince black people that the only solution to this problem is confrontation with whites and ultimately their destruction. Now, again, let me be the one to say it directly because somebody got to say it directly. But it should not always be said directly because that's not the most effective way. Some people will get it more effectively if it's not said directly. And we need to be said directly, indirectly, underhandedly, overhandedly, sideways, as long as it gets through. And so your object as an intellectual is to start reading these books differently. Stop reading the books for dates and times. Yeah, dates and times are fine, but you're looking for the resources in books and the perspectives that if a person gets that you can say, now you understand, you tried your solution, perhaps. But your solution is to find one who successfully dealt with the European, and let it match what we're saying here and say, look, see how Mao Zedong did it? He just lined his mighties up and got rid of them, and then lined his drug addicts up and said, you got a certain amount of time, and they didn't. He killed those other people. But great. Just you legitimize, and you make somebody see, dang, you know what? Based on history, you're right. When you have these kind of problems that the whites have created, sometimes you have to sacrifice some of your own people in order to clean yourself up so that you then can protect yourself. We need the intellectuals to spend all of your time finding clever, listen to what I'm saying, clever. It don't have to be direct like I'm doing. That's my job. Cut your lane. You guys say it so that it's palatable. I don't care if it's palatable now. I'm going to tell you how to do it. You make it palatable. You take what I'm saying now, but you make it palatable. That makes you more important than me because you get across to a lot more people than I will. I'm only getting across to the Maroons and the Haitians and a few civilians who are strong enough to sit in there and listen and hang on. Most of the people hear me and say, I'm going the other way. Yeah, I heard the dude. Yeah, I heard them, and they gone. Those ain't the ones I'm trying to reach. I'm trying to reach the ones that will reach the masses. I need to reach you. You the Haitian, you the Maroon, you the strong civilian who hears what I'm saying. Now you got to get my message in a way that is palatable, that the Negro can even take and say, yeah, you know, you made a good point there. And so that we get what we want, what we're looking for is movement. We want everything to move. We want even the Uncle Toms to move away from a certain level of coonery. You want everything to move in that direction. When there's a shift to move, first there's a break. The severe Uncle Toms, the homos, the sadistic European traitors of our race, when everything moves this way, some of them just break off altogether and they get stuck with the Europeans. And we know what we got to do with them. But then there's a full move of the masses of our people. Even some Uncle Toms who in the church used to have a white Jesus up, now they put a black Jesus up. No, we ain't looking for no. You got a gay white boy, then they put a gay black dude up there. But at least it represents some kind of move in their mind. Well, we're saying, I need the intellectuals to engage in the process of moving every black mind a step ahead, and then a second step ahead, and a third step ahead, so that 10 years from now or 20 years from now, when somebody's having dialogue, what I'm saying sounds so palatable and so simplistic that it's easy on black. You heard that a long time ago. AKG said that 20 years ago. We want our people to be not just talking, but engaged in things 20 years from now that make what we say today sound simplistic. And you know, we want somebody to say 20 years from now, AKG was saying that, but that was easy. He wasn't really giving us the real deal. But they won't be able to relate because we've created a world that makes what they have to do palatable. It makes it seem like what I'm saying is just smacks and bubble gum. You know what I'm saying? It makes sense. I need the intellectuals to do that, and that's how war happens. The intellectuals in the community make arguments for the masses of the people that allow the masses of the people to see racial warfare as not only logical but as the only palatable solution. Such that it ain't even looked at as a solution. It just looked like that's just what we got to do. And such that the idea of whites being gone is so ordinary that people have heard it so much in so many different ways. Even if you're into making films, make a film about the future with all black people getting along and maybe Native Americans. We cross the oceans and seas, and then when we go to Europe, it's black people and Native Americans who live together. So you don't have to have no white folks in it. That's the whole point. You start creating ideas here, man. Yeah, man, I love that movie. There were a number of black people, Native Americans in it. Nobody else was here. You get the point. The point is you creating an idea in black people's minds of what the world would be like without whites, and the world you created is so good, so phenomenal, and so fun, everybody wants to be in that world. Now, that imaginative place you create becomes a real place because when they go to work, and deal with these nasty crackers and go home, they be like, man, we need to create a world without no damn whiteies. These whiteies are crazy. And it becomes palatable for them to conceive of it. Everybody, play your life. Stop doing it on racial warfare ground. That's what the time is. This is not the 20th. No. All of that. We pass any discussion about, you know, this is what I'm saying. I'm not saying that the intellectuals should not say, hey, the irritated genie said 20% is race war. Is this true? You shouldn't be doing that, because that kind of discussion leads to making people say it's very palatable. But what you should not be doing is letting Negroes come in to try to say that it's not palatable. See, don't let a Negro lead the argument. Stop allowing Negroes to have room. We got to start being, this is the last piece, and then I'll entertain any questions. The last piece, one of the things I've seen that we have done in history that has made us unsuccessful. When we become engaged in racial warfare with whites, we become so in love with our own people that we don't want to hurt them. So Marcus Garvey will be living amongst the W.E.B. Du Bois who's trying to destroy him. And when you got brothers that want to go shoot this dude or stab him up, Garvey's like, no, we're not going to do it like that. We don't want to create an inner war, or he's still our brother and all that kind of stuff. And I understand that, you know, the most honorable Elijah Muhammad was like that. No, we're not going to fight with King, even though he's trying to tear down what we're doing. He'll realize the error in his ways. That's real mature and cool. But we don't really have that kind of time to be playing with these Negroes like that. And I don't really believe it works. We have to have enough room that civilians, Maroons, and Haitians, we can have disagreement because we're trying to get proper resolution and we want to win. But when upside-down pyramids start having opinions, and those opinions are completely illegitimate, like we should date white folks, we got to start taking away. We have to operate with a little bit of a level of tyranny. Like, look, you know, you're going to have to stop giving your opinions. We're not going to talk to them about it. It's like, your opinion is not valid. You can't continue to have it, and you're going to stop saying it, and we're going to make you. We don't have to say it. Just make it happen. You know, we got to – everybody's opinion is not allowed to be given. No. You know, if you're a civilian, and we have disagreement amongst each other, we got to be mature enough to respect each other. But the upside-down pyramids, Uncle Tom's, the Negroes, and Coons, they don't have opinions anyway. They're not relevant. If it's left up to them, we'd all die. So they don't have the right to speak. That's the bottom line. And that's the last piece I want to say. We got to start being a little meaner. We're not mean enough. You know, the nationalist movement, these movements don't get no respect because we don't kill people. We don't hurt people. When they desecrate, when somebody makes a joke about Nat Turner, we don't bust them upside the head. You know, you make a joke about Nat Turner, well, let me show you how funny Nat Turner was. That's how we start giving people. You don't make a joke about Harriet Tubman. You don't call Harriet Tubman a bitch. You say something like that. You know, I don't know what I might do to you. We got to two people you don't. They're very nice. They're very kind. But you don't go over there disrespecting them, playing with their names. You know how these Negroes do. We change our names to African names. We got to stop being like, you know, not even speaking to us when they do that. Brother, I was just being funny. No, we not. You know, don't always speak to them. You know, don't even speak to no sister that comes up and, hey, are you one of them Black Power Matumba Tumba people, huh? You just look at them and keep walking. So, like, you're beneath me. Don't speak to me. And it's not a joke. And I don't even want to hear your apology. We got to start. Some of us got to start being jerks. Not all of us, but some of us got to start being jerks. So that you don't need for Negroes. We got the kind of arrogance that's in you because that we know. But if you show yourself to be a coon, a cracker lover, an integrationist Negro, not only do some of us not have time for you, some of us will reach out, good cop. Well, brother, you know, I want you to understand and talk to them. Some of us got to be jerks, man. Like, I'm not talking to this coon, man. Get him out of my face. Nah, he not welcome in the house tonight. No, we had this party, but he's a coon. He can come in. Nah, your man can't come. Oh, man, I understand. Sorry about that, man. You take him home with you, and that coon, you got to explain to him all the way home why your friend wouldn't let him in the house because he's a coon. He's out there trying to justify white abuse of black people, and that's just not tolerated amongst us. Or he's trying to justify integrated marriage. We're not even going to talk to that Negro. And if some of us will, but there's some of us who, as Maroons, Haitians, civilians, we still cool with the person. But that person, we know that person to be a person that's not tolerant of these Negroes. So that Negroes start questioning their own behavior. Right now, nothing checks a Negro's behavior. We're too nice to them. We need some real cocky, mean-spirited, nasty people in our community that we get along with, but that don't nobody else get along with. And I'm going to stop right there because I'm sure somebody has something they want to say. Beat up them. Go ahead, beat up them if you want to.
Wow, that was a lot of constructive information. Thanks for the response. Go ahead, Gus.
Brother Gus?
Gus, you there?
Brother Gus.
I think he might have got disconnected. I don't know what happened.
Oh, okay. You got disconnected?
I don't know. Maybe.
Oh, okay. If I stay on, will he be able to connect back in, or should I call back in? Do you know which way to be better?
I do not know.
I was momentarily disconnected. My apologies. My fingers got nervous. All that talk about doing away with white people made me nervous. Please forgive.
You got a little nervous, brother.
All good. All good. Context of white supremacy. Again, just a real pleasure to have him back for the fourth time. The irritated genie of Southeast, author of War on the Horizon, Black Resistance to the White Sex Assault. The phone line filled up immediately. Like, as soon as the show began, the phone line filled up. So I want to see if we can get some questions. Before I go to the phone line, I also want to make sure I recognize Sister Nefertari Mehmood Nzinga's efforts with the second annual Nat Turner Day weekend celebration. I was able to watch quite a bit of the celebration on War on the Horizon's live stream. Fantastic. I hope a lot of people got to tune in and check that out. And I told her when she was on the program a few weeks ago, hopefully the white race will have been destroyed by next August. But if that's not the case, I will plan on being in Philadelphia for the third annual Nat Turner Day weekend celebration. So hopefully it won't be necessary, but if it is, we'll be broadcasting live, hopefully. Also wanted to acknowledge, because I believe this is someone who is familiar with your work. He's on my Facebook page. This is Mr. Freedom Turner Garveyite. He said that he was just, I guess, excited that Dr. Baruti and Irritated Genie were doing the cows on back-to-back days. That's the second time that's happened, and the second time that's happened in the last 2 months to have Dr. Baruti, Irritated Genie on the show back-to-back days. Could you please let us know how we can support any materials, the videos you all have at War on the Horizon, the book? Can you give out as much of that information as possible?
Yes, it's very simple for brothers and sisters. You can go to www.waronthehorizon.com. Again, that's www.waronthehorizon.com. And when you go to waronthehorizon.com, you go into the War on the Horizon store, and there's about 6 different menus inside the store that you can get the individual DVDs, you can get the DVD sets. In our other products, we have the Brothers Keepers double CD. We also have some other things in there. And, you know, you can just go through and look at all of the things there, and you can purchase it right online. We do our best job to try to get things out to you in a very timely manner. If you have any problem with any of our products, you can send them back. You can just give us a call. You don't have to send them back. I apologize for that. You just call us up and tell us, hey, this thing is not working. We make sure that you've tried it in multiple machines, because sometimes it'll play in one machine but not another, and that's just about technology. But if we find that we sent you defective material, we'll just send it right back out to you. No hassle, no issue. And we've had very few duds, but every now and then we get one, and we just send it right back out to you. People really appreciate the work that we've done. I think it's very professional, and we do all that we can to provide you with the best quality work, and at the same time, not just, you know, the media production is quality, but the level of the information, the proof for the understanding of what we're dealing with and the history, and we think that what we provide our people is life-affirming information that is almost as important, next thing important to oxygen and water.
Outstanding, outstanding. The web address again, waronthehorizon.com. If you're listening at Blog Talk Radio, you can just click Irritated Genie of Southeast and it will take you to their website. I have watched several of the videos. They are outstanding. I cannot give them enough recognition for the constructive information in those videos. Definitely want to get those. And the book, War on the Horizon, Black Resistance to the White Sex Assault. And I also want to recognize this program. We just went over our first 100,000 listens at Blog Talk Radio for the Cows with this program. I hope people have got some constructive information. People on the phone line, I believe this is 818, ebonynewschannel.blogspot.com. Did you have a question for the Irritated Genie? Let's see. We'll check. This is Bay Area caller, caller in the Bay Area. Did you have a question for the Irritated Genie?
No questions at this time. Thank you.
Okay. Person called in, last four digits of your number is showing up at 0650. 0650. Did you have a question for the Irritated Genie?
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir, we can hear you.
All right, just making sure that there's a little delay on my end. Just want to thank the Irritated Genie for coming on, and thank you, Gus, for providing us with this information. I guess I want to make a comment because I called in like maybe 2 or 3 months ago, and I made this statement you might remember. I said that black people we've had a problem for thousands of years, and that's being too nice. I said that a long time ago, and I'm glad the Irritated Genie could come in and confirm that. That statement for me. I don't know if you remember that conversation that we had a while back.
Hello, Brother Gus. Our brother who just made that comment.
Yeah, I don't know if he might have. Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't know if he got knocked off again.
Well, yeah, I never heard you make that comment, but I would definitely say I 100% agree with you, and it's I would go as far as say as a historical fact. We've been too nice, and we need to turn that off until this problem is resolved. So I definitely agree with you, brother.
Let's see. Mr. Nero. Mr. Nero, did you have a question for Irritated Gene? Your line is open.
I am not in the most in the quietest location right now. If you could come back to me, I would appreciate it, Gus.
Not a problem, sir. Not a problem. I wanted to double check because I know 818, she is a big fan. 818, is your line open? Did you have a question or are you just listening? Might not be her. I will check person calling at a blocked number. Let's see if that's it. Person calling at a blocked number, did you have a question for Irritated Genie? Okay, I will assume they are listening. Before I check, because I think there were two other people, before I checked, I wanted to ask this at the outset of the program. When you were with us in July of this year and you talked about the resolution being the destruction of the white race, that program, a lot of people listened to it, made them very uncomfortable. And as I talked to more people who heard that broadcast, what I heard over and over was black people are not comfortable even thinking about the idea of using counter violence against white people. I talked to some people who have read Mr. Fuller's work, and they're familiar with the chapter in his book that deals with war, and they said that they are not comfortable with that section of the book. Some of them said that they couldn't even read it. What would your view be on suggestions to get non-white people to understand the severity of this problem and to help non-white people get comfortable dealing with the thought of using counter violence, the destruction of the white race?
I'm going to tell you a few things. One of them, and this is a wonderful question, the whole entire library of the War on the Horizon media explains to black people what we're facing. It's good enough that a reasonable person will look at it and say, we got to do something about this. Because we have to be able to show our people in clear, definitive, certain terms, that whites are attacking us and trying to exterminate us. Once they see it, then at that point, you're dealing with an unreasonable person that doesn't realize that we're going to have to fight back. That's one thing. So I would say, I'm not just saying just that media. All of the media, the books, the teaching, all of our education has to be geared at showing black people. Again, that's what I was saying our intellectuals have to do. The books, the media, everything has to be geared at showing the white race for what they are and making it palatable in the minds of black people that we have to fight back. A second answer to that is, that's why exactly we've created a paradigm. It is not that black people are not comfortable. It is that civilians are not comfortable and upside-down pyramids are not comfortable. The Haitians and the Maroons are those small group of black people who that's the only thing they are comfortable with, is the idea of us getting organized so that we can fight whites. And so that's why my message goes to them, because we have to start. See, what happens is, it's like anything. There's a bully in the classroom. Until somebody punches the bully in the face and beats the bully up, everybody is paralyzed by the bully. Even the dude that don't beat the bully, if he catches the bully with a really good punch and stuns the bully, everybody in the class starts looking. Some of the young bullies start looking and say, man, this dude can be beat. I saw what happened. And now the bully even if he beats the dude up, the fact that he got hit and got stunned for a second, you go, man, if I'd have jumped in there, I could help this dude win. He starts thinking about ways to beat the bully. The Maroons and the Haitians have got to start acting. Those people who already are committed to this idea, like I'm one of those people, I'm completely comfortable with violence. Like, I like violence against whites. I think it's cool. I mean, I enjoy it. I can sit down and watch Reginald Denny get hit with that brick like a million times. It's like funnier than any Def Jam comedy you can possibly imagine, because somewhere in my wiring, I've accepted the fact that it's the only way we're going to get free. So I know what they've done to us, so I enjoy seeing them suffer and get pain. It's like something I enjoy. People like me, and there are a lot of people like me, not a lot in terms of percentage, but there are a lot of people out there that are like this and who would do it but have not done it because all of our leaders promised to give us permission to do it, then they'll never do it. Well, I'm going to do it differently. I'm going to give you permission before I get to the point of having the power to do it. I'm going to give you permission so that once whites start taking hits, once Omar Thornton start going out there and doing stuff and it becomes more regular, what happens is more of our people are seeing whites face that violence. And they start seeing, wow, these whites are not incapable of, because whites seem invincible until they start getting hit. And you start seeing them frantic and panic and see how they fold when they're facing the same kind of assault that we're facing. So we need people to actively start engaging and get away with it so they never know who does it. It starts opening up the black mind. So we need actively engaged black people engaged in physical violence against whites on a repetitive, consistent basis such that it becomes part of our Constitution. There's always some black people out here fighting against these white folks. That was the Nation of Islam did in the 1950s and 60s. They was constantly out there fighting. That was what the Black Panthers did. The Black Panthers started chasing the police down with their guns, and people thought, man, the police ain't that tough. And they're not that tough. Black people start fighting back because once they saw one group doing it, they said, hey, we can fight these police. Like, they're not that tough. And that's what has to happen. We got to find the intellectuals that got to engage, and we got to have some real bangers that start going and giving the devil some of his own medicine, and it'll start emboldening our people. Brother Gus?
Oh, okay. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Okay, outstanding. I said I want to do my effort to support that work. I was nosing around on the War Room on War on the Horizon, and I saw that you recommended quite a few books. One of them was Fred Williams, Negroes with Guns. I think that is an excellent illustration, a real-life example of Black people using counterviolence and it being effective, it producing constructive results for them. I wanted to check down the road if you would be interested in doing a program focused on Fred Williams' book, Negroes with Guns. Do you think that might be constructive?
Absolutely. Robert F. Williams. Yes, I think that would be an outstanding program.
Robert Williams. Yes, sir. I wanted to also double check. Mr. Nero, I think he's still with us. If you're in a quieter area, Mr. Nero, please go right ahead if you have a question.
No, sir, I'm not in a quieter area. I apologize, but I appreciate you, and I always appreciate the genie coming on the show. He is certainly one of my favorite guests, and I look forward to him coming back.
Outstanding. I want to check to see if any of the folks that are on my line, if they have a question. Okay. I don't know. Khadija, if you're on the line, did you have a question for Irritated Genie, or are you just listening? Okay, I think she's just listening. I want to check Non-Mighty Wick as well. We had one other caller who called in. Thank you for everybody who called in. We've had a ton of callers today. I'm actually having to do a little bit of work on the switchboard to manage all this. Thank you, everyone, for supporting. I hope you have found the program to be of constructive value. Okay, Non-Mighty Wick says he's just listening. Justice, did you have any other questions you wanted to ask?
Not at this point, thank you.
Outstanding. We're at the 2-hour mark. Did you have time for one more question, sir?
Absolutely.
Okay. I had said when we spoke a few weeks back, masculinity, and I think you've talked about that a lot today, and the importance of Black people stepping up, being men and women, facing the problems that we have, being honest about that, and doing the job to bring about resolution. I had a Black male. He's a consistent listener of this broadcast, an investor. And he said, being a Black male and being a victim of racism, white supremacy, being in a system that does not allow Black people to be men and women, he said it's just been tough having that understanding of racism, white supremacy, but still being victimized, still being mistreated, not feeling as though you can be an adequate provider or protector for your family, for your wife, for your children. And he wanted some insight on how to deal with that and the possibility of redefining, reconceptualizing masculinity, Black masculinity under the system of white supremacy. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I'll be honest. That would be one I'm going to give an answer, but it has to be a personal answer because I haven't had the time. It's a loaded question. It's an excellent question, but it's one that I have to sit down to give a best answer and spend some time with. But I'll say for me, for instance, I know what needs to be done. And so I'm going to tell the story. I might have already told the story on the show, but I figure I'll tell it again because it really means something to me. You know, my mother told me maybe two years ago, that she realized when I was in high school, because I was a white high school in Massachusetts, she said she realized that one day the whites were going to kill me because that I would never back down to them. And that when she realized that, she decided that she would start preparing herself now for the day that I get killed, and that she would never do anything to prevent me from doing what I'm doing because she knows this is what I want to do. And I was almost balled up in tears because I was like, wow, you would think that a mother would try to save her son from this. But, you know, what makes me so endearing and in love with my mother is that is my manhood. The only thing that makes me feel like a man is that I see my race is in trouble and I am trying to destroy your enemies for you. If there's a button for me to push, I do it. You know, I'm doing what I know how to do. And so I do get up and feel good about myself in the morning. I'm a very realist. When I look at the condition of the world and the condition our people are in, I don't feel like a man. I'm not going to lie to you. I mean, I really don't feel like a man. The only thing that gives me that manhood, here's my mother, who gave me life, saying that she really respects me because I'm a real man. Because somebody needs to fight these crackers and I'll do it. That makes me feel like a man because here is a black woman, my mother, blood of my blood, flesh of my flesh, the one that gave me life, telling me that she knows that what I'm doing, she can't protect me from these beasts and that eventually they're going to see what I'm doing. They say, this guy got to go. But that she's okay with that. Not that she wants it, but she's not going to do nothing to tell me to slow down because she knows it needs to be done. And she says she wanted a son who would do that. And now that she's gotten that, she's not going to take that away from me. So my point being, I really don't have on the cusp. I'm usually pretty good off the cusp. Not on this one. The answer to what a person does for the black man to get your manhood, I can say what I'm doing. I'm doing everything I can without regard for, I mean, I don't try to be stupid, but if I was using any level of caution, I would not say the things that I'm saying because I recognize the impact that they can have, all the terrorism laws. I know everything they can do to me. I don't care because somebody has to do what I'm doing, and I really believe that it's my job. If I don't do it, no one will do it. So my thing is if every man and woman does their job, we'll win. I can't really concern myself with every man or woman, though. I just say, what can I do? And so to answer his question, the way I do it, I do what I know I'm supposed to do. I was born to make you hate your enemies, want to kill them. That's my job. After I've done that, I can go back to my ancestors. They're going to invite me and say, boy, you did your job. I really don't care what happens to me after this. I'm doing my job. I'm breathing. When I listen to people like you, brother, you're an intelligent black man. And I'm not saying you didn't already have the answer, but I'm saying I've impacted you. I know I have. That means more to me than anything because you're going to carry this struggle on. You got your daughter there. You're reaching the masses of our people. Our people are listening to you because you're a sincere black man. If I can reach a man like yourself, they can reach more of my people and can carry this thought. They can't kill the thought. They can't kill the idea. We now got the idea, and it's gaining a format. It's not just a thought there, a passing thought. It's gaining a structure. I don't care no more. I don't have to worry about what happens to me because, I mean, if they come, I got something for them. I got them, you know, I only got 9 in the clips. I don't know how long I'm going to last. But I'm saying, if something happens to me, I know that I left all the cards on the table. I know that I can go to my ancestors, and when they say, why didn't you do this, that, and the other, I say, I didn't think about it. But believe me, if I had thought about it, I would have done it. You know, I did everything I could think to give my people to survive. I did it. That's what makes me able to get up in the morning and feel good about myself. The answer to my brother's question is I feel exactly like him. It feels real difficult looking at what the Europeans are doing to our people. If you're an honest person and you're not pathological in your thinking and you're honest about what they're doing to us, it makes it difficult to impossible for me to get up and not be doing nothing to help my race and even go day to day. So this is what I do. I go to the full extent and give my people everything that I have inside of me in form of lectures, in form of organization, in form of pictures. I take all of my money and I invest in artwork that our people can look at and give them the idea to fight. Words, email blast, anything I can do that makes black people say, we got to fight back, we got to survive, I'm doing it because that's what makes me feel like a man. I'll be honest. Is one is a dedication to my race, but also I can't bear the weight of existing in a world where my people are being killed and I'm not killing back. And so maybe I'm not pulling physical triggers every day, but I feel like I'm going to get more crackers killed with my words than I will with my guns because someone will go kill them. I might not be the one, but some scientist will make something that will attack the DNA of the European and kill them. Some gangbangers will go out there and start arming. I don't care who does what, but I feel like I'm going to lead to more white deaths. I would feel good if I lead to more white deaths than any person that's ever lived on this planet. Even if it's 100 years from now, I mean, I don't know that I will, but I'm saying that's how I live my life. That's what I want to do. I want to give my enemy the pain that they're doing, and I'm doing the best that I can do. That's where my manhood lies. Now, everybody will be different probably, but in short, that's the best answer I can give off the cuff. That's what gives me life is that I'm trying to destroy my enemies. I feel like a man. I feel like I'm a man. I'm trying to kill them every day of my life.
Wow. I believe 818 was able to call in. 818, if you have a question for Irritated Jeannie, your line should be open.
Hello, greetings, Irritated Jeannie.
How you doing, my son?
I'm good, and you?
Fantastic.
I wanted to... I'm sorry, I'm a little excited. I wanted to thank you for the DVD. I found it to be very constructive, and the CD as well, and I found the information you just gave today constructive because I have currently been battling in my mind between doing what needs to be done and earning a living, you know, because you can't necessarily make the kind of money countering racism that you make conforming to it. But I wanted to know, for those of us who have talents and gifts and things that we want to do to counter racism, white supremacy, do you have any ideas how we go about getting financial support to invest in doing that outside of getting it from white people?
Yes. And let me tell you, like what we're doing now, like I say, I put all my money in. Well, like for a good example, the sister does the Nat Turner Day weekend celebration. Amos Wilson talked about some a concept that I thought was brilliant. He said, you have to create a taste for nationalism. In other words, how do you get money into something like this? People have to want it. So the sister creates a Nat Turner Day weekend celebration with no promise that anyone will come. War on the Horizon, when we started the sister Nefertari and the children of Southampton were doing it, we said we love the idea. We're going to give all of our money and resources. We go to work every day, put our money into what she's doing. This is her second year, and now she was able to get a play done. Well, not only is it a play, but it's these brothers that do this CD. Well, these brothers that named Brothers Keeper that make music are the most talented brothers in the world. Well, we're promoting their CDs and the people buy that CD and come to the play. My point being, it goes to what you're saying. Well, they're entertainers. They got to work jobs every day and everything like that. But she creates a forum where they can go and perform. We financially try to help, such that it creates an excitement about nationalism, such that people listen to Gus's show. Now he's creating an excitement. We'll give him this money to go get a machine that he can do better what he's doing now. We create the taste for nationalism. So there are those of us out there that are thinking like this now. We're taking all of our money and resources, burning up credit cards, mortgaging, leveraging the money on our houses, doing everything we can to create a taste of nationalism. So that a sister like you who does, let's say, you so well, well, we're going to eventually want our own War on the Horizon shirts and outfits. Even if we didn't want it, if we found out that's what you do, we would start investing in you to do that. Then when people saw that at the functions that we have, they go, man, those are some high uniforms. Who made that for you? It's the sister in such and such place that does that. We give them your card. Now we're creating a taste. We're creating a desire for the goods and services that we produce. It is not going to overnight take us off the plantation, but this will have to happen. If you're like-minded like we are, you got to take what extra money you have and support the cows. You got to support Irritated Jeannie. Irritated Jeannie got to support the cows. Whatever it is that you say that you do, sister, you got to let Brother him know. You got to pay for advertising space on his show. And then tell people to buy this so that you advertise what you do. And then when I listen to his show, since you advertise on his show, whatever it is that you do is something that I'm going to buy from somebody to advertise on my brother Gus' show because I know that they're probably of like mind. We support each other like that, and we create a taste for nationalism. Then some of us will be able to eventually get off these jobs. But if we don't create that taste, that's the difficulty. You can be the best person at anything in the world. Our people don't desire freedom, so they won't pay for it. So we make them desire freedom by making it exciting, by giving it to them consistently, by tuning as many people in as possible, by getting people to need it in their life. And once they need it, then they will finance it. And then instead of spending their money on sneakers, they will spend it on cows, War on the Horizon, Children of Southampton. But it starts with us supporting each other. So that I hope that was an explanation that kind of I hope it gave some kind of explanation or answer to what you were asking.
Definitely. I just encountered somebody asking me what I wanted to do, as far as a business. And basically my answer was provide information to my people. And for some reason, they didn't think that anyone would support that and that it was a valid, you know, legitimate business, even though we have people giving misinformation to our people, making loads of money off of it. So I definitely appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Yes, ma'am.
Outstanding. Man, I have thoroughly enjoyed the broadcast. I do want to catch my error. This Robert F. Williams, Negroes with Guns. Robert F. Williams, Negroes with Guns. But, yeah, I highly recommend anybody listening to the program, black people listening to the program, check that book out, Negroes with Guns. They have a documentary by the same name that also deals with that title. I'm definitely going to see if we can make that happen here at Teddy Genie, Context of White Supremacy, and just kind of do a book review as a program on Robert F. Williams, Negroes with Guns. I think that would do a lot to help us becoming more comfortable with the idea of destruction of the white race and the use of counter violence in the system of white supremacy. Before we wrap up, I definitely want to thank you for coming back and sharing time and give you the opportunity. Anything you would like to say in closing, anything you would like to leave people with to think about, to resonate on, feel free.
Yes, there are two things I want to say. One, we have a lot of people that go to our website and subscribe to our email blast. But what happens is when you put your email address in there and we start sending you the emails, when you get the first email, if it goes into your junk mail and you don't check your junk mail, all of the emails will go into your junk mail. So, brothers and sisters, if you're signing up to get our e-blast, which I think you'll really like, when you go into the waronourrising.com website, it's on the right sidebar. It says subscribe to our e-blast. You put your email address in there. You don't have to put your name or anything like that. Make sure over the next week you check your email, and it'll be an email coming from liberation@waronourrising.com. Make sure you pull it out of your trash or your junk mail if it goes to your junk filter, and put it in your inbox, and then from then on, it will come directly to your inbox. So that's one thing. And secondly, want to say to people, I want you to remember this. I know that this is frightening for a lot of people, but that's not really important because it's necessary. What is important is that you only have to play your lane. There are three levels for a right-side-up pyramid, and that's civilian, which means you don't have to pull no physical triggers, but you have to be a committed race person and responsible to your people, decent black person trying to do the right thing. You can do that, and that's, some people say it's not hard. That is hard in this world, but you have to do that, and then you can be on that right-side-up pyramid. If you want to get in and really start fighting for the rest of your life, you can be a maroon. And if you're a person who feels full when you hear the kind of conversation and dialogue we're having tonight, who's been waiting for this your whole life and saying, why did it take this long for me to hear this? This is what I've been waiting for my whole life. You may be a Haitian. And it means that it is time that our race is led not by civilians and not by upside-down pyramids. Now need to have the race led by Maroons and Haitians, because they're the people that can save us. It doesn't make any of our people less important, but it means that they're not in the favorable mental condition to lead our people at this time. So I am personally handing over the race to the responsible Maroons and Haitians of the world who live for racial conquest and racial warfare with our white enemies, who thrive off the notion and are ready to engage and desperate to engage. I hereby turn the race over to you and say that you must exercise tyranny and racial responsibility. Take your race in your hands, and we must engage our enemies in such a way to be successful. With that said, we like to say, we always say, Brother Gus, we appreciate you, and I'm not just big upping you to be doing it. You have moved me. I don't particularly care to do radio shows. You've got me enjoying doing radio discussions, looking forward to them, and getting excited again about talking to our people. Not that I don't love talking to black people, but I mean, Your show has me in a whole other place and time. I don't have the kind of dialogues in other places that I do on your show because we don't have the time and the mentality. But the mentality you bring and your listeners bring, the open-mindedness and maturity that they bring to this is so refreshing for me that it rejuvenates me, it rejuvenates my Warner Horizon team. They love your show. They listen to your show as much and more than they listen to anybody else's show, and I want you to keep doing what you're doing, and I want you brothers and sisters out there to support this brother, to support him, because I see freedom in Gus T. Renegade and his show. And Warner Horizon, brother, we're with you. If there's something we can do to help you, please let us know. We appreciate all that you're doing. We appreciate you bringing a young lady on the phone to give us new energy and new life, and we will see you on the battlefield.
And I, man, just appreciative, incredibly humbled, and grateful that you are willing to come and share some of your time and energy. I know you have a full plate. It is always an honor to have you on the program, and just hoping we can continue the dialogue to have you back and continue the discussion. I know you have had a huge impact on listeners and riling folks up and getting them uncomfortable, and that's exactly what I want to happen on this program, to have people getting uncomfortable with the ugly realities of white supremacy and resolution. What are we going to do about this? I will definitely be in touch, and just look forward to having you on the broadcast again. And definitely thank you to the entire staff on War on the Horizon. I appreciate them. I see them getting the links out on Facebook and the investments, just everything. I appreciate it, and it makes me keep my standards very high for coming in to do this program to make sure that what I'm doing is worthy of your support. So thank you, and thank everyone at War on the Horizon. And, yeah, we will definitely make every effort to do it again, sir.
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much, and we will be in touch soon.
All right. Look forward to hearing from you.
Yes, sir.
Bye.
Context of white supremacy. Thoroughly enjoyed the broadcast. Visit number 4 from the Irritated Genie of Southeast. Please support the website waronthehorizon.com. Again, waronthehorizon.com. Outstanding material. They have DVDs. They, of course, have the book War on the Horizon, Black Resistance to the White Sex Assault. Please support their efforts. And the blackout, context of white supremacy. I hope everybody that invested, I hope the first two shows, I hope it has been worthy of your investment and will continue to be the case. We'll be back on Sunday with Marira and Ashra Kwesi of Kemet New. Should be continuing in the exact same vein. I think Irritated Genie has a ton of respect for the work that they do, and I hope that will be a fantastic broadcast. Always great to have a black male and black female couple together on the program. So tune in Sunday, 5 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Central, and 2 p.m. Pacific. And I also want to recognize Sister Nefertari's efforts. She's done 3 fantastic broadcasts right here at the COWS. Their web address, OurKaws.com, OurKaws.com. Outstanding effort for the 2nd annual Nat Turner Day weekend celebration. Justice, did you want to give your email before we sign out?
Sure. Justice.asap@yahoo.com. Again, justice.asap@yahoo.com.
Outstanding. Did you have anything else you wanted to say before we get out of here?
Nope.
Outstanding. Again, just want to recognize that we've had a whole month of milestones here at the COWS. Irritated Genie talked about a few of those at the beginning of the broadcast. Just in August of 2010, the context of white supremacy did the 200th broadcast at Blog Talk Radio. We were able to successfully raise the necessary funds for the MacBook Pro and carrying case and picked up our 100,000th listen at Blog Talk Radio, all in the month of August 2010. And hopefully there will be more to come, because none of that stuff was the goal. The goal is replace white supremacy with justice, the destruction of the white race. That is the goal, not to see how many listens we can get here at Blog Talk Radio, although I think that will help us accomplish the goal. We'll be back this Sunday. Thank you so much, and I do want to take a quick moment. Please support Cree's blog, cree7.wordpress.com. Again, cree7.wordpress.com. Her program right here at Blog Talk Radio, Counter Racist Evolving Engineer, Back of the Bus, his blog, nonwhitealliance.wordpress.com. Again, nonwhitealliance.wordpress.com. And you heard her on the broadcast, 818ebonynewschannel.blogspot.com. Again, ebonynewschannel.blogspot.com. We will be back on Sunday, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific, August 29th. Marira Kwesi, Ashra Kwesi, Kemet New should be an outstanding broadcast. The end of summer blackout, context of white supremacy. We will be back. Signing out.